Good evening. It's a joy to be here tonight. I would say it's also a joy to see faces other than those of college students. So I'm kind of kidding about that. But if you didn't know, my name is Jeb. I work at the University of Connecticut. This is my sixth semester at the University of Connecticut, and sadly, it is also my last. So if I don't know you at this point, I would still like to get to know you, so please do not hesitate to come and talk to me. We've been working through this series at RUF. It's called All of Life Belongs to God, and one of the things that I find myself talking to with college students pretty frequently is loneliness. And this is a concept that I see a lot of students wrestling with, and I see that this is a concept in which, you know, is a big part of my experience as well. So tonight we're going to be looking in the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to be looking at Ecclesiastes 4, 7 through 12. And on your pew Bible, it'll be on page 555, I think. All right. Ecclesiastes 4, 7 through 12. Read with me. Again, I saw vanity under the sun, one person who has no other, either son or brother, yet there is no end to all his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, "For whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity and an unhappy business. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him who is alone when he falls and has not another to lift him up. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though a man might prevail against one who is alone, two will withstand him. A threefold cord is not quickly broken." Would you guys pray with me? Father in heaven, you are so good and so glorious to give us your word. Be with us tonight. Send your spirit upon us tonight. Open our hearts and our minds and our ears to hear your word. We thank you for it. And we thank you for your son, Jesus. We pray this all in his name. Amen. All right. So the 17th century French mathematician and theologian Blaise Pascal once said, "All of humanity's problems stem from man's inability to sit quietly in a room alone." I think he's onto something. I think he's onto something in regards to the problem of being alone. According to recent research conducted by the American Psychological Association, there was a study involving 300,000 participants, and it revealed that those with greater social connections have a 50% reduced risk of dying early. And according to the AARP, over 42 million Americans over the age of 45 suffer from chronic loneliness. More than a quarter of the population lives alone. So Pascal was onto something. Loneliness is a problem. Isolation is a problem. What do we do with it? We live in a society and a culture that is increasingly lonely and increasingly more isolated. I wonder how many of you are aware of the kind of loneliness that pervades much of our society and much of our culture. You know, retirement homes, schools, college campuses, workplaces, and you know, perhaps even our own homes. There's a sense of isolation that pervades many aspects of our lives. Maybe you know that feeling all too well. Maybe you remember it in the past. Maybe you were new to a community. There's this sense of being new to something, the sense of disconnection from some kind of wider community. Maybe you're working around people all the time and you see their faces every day, but you still feel disconnected from them. Maybe you have this sense of that you're a single person and you are not connected intimately in marriage with someone. Perhaps you've felt this. Perhaps you feel this loneliness in your own home of being around people who you think you should be closest to and be known by and to know, but you still feel a sense of isolation. we live in a very isolating culture. We live in a very individualistic culture. But it's a human experience to feel lonely. But before we consider what loneliness is, before we talk about what loneliness is according to this, I want to talk about what isolation is. I want to see what this passage has to say about isolation. So where we're going to go tonight, we're going to go 3 points, all right? Because we're Presbyterian. First point, the tragedy of isolation. Second point, the dignity of loneliness. Third point, the end of loneliness and isolation. Okay? So the tragedy of isolation. So there's two types of isolation that we typically tend to see. We see a type of isolation that is self-imposed, and much of this passage has a lot to say about this. The book of Ecclesiastes, in which we just read from, has a lot to say about the world that we live in and man's failed attempts at trying to find purpose and meaning aside from God. You know, and these first few verses that we just read could be applied to well near anyone here. In American terms, this writer could very well be asking and saying this question of, you know, you have a great job. You know, you have a great retirement plan. You know, you saw the Patriots win the Super Bowl, which they didn't this year, unfortunately, for many of you in this room, not for me. But, you know, what does it matter if we see all these successes and we experience all this pleasure in our life? What is the point of it at the end of the day when there's no one beside us? What is the point? What is the point of any of this if we cannot share pleasure and success with one another? So this is, in a sense, what isolation is. It's a state of being disconnected from others. Not just in a romantic sense, because I know we live in a very romanticized society. It's not talking about a disconnection in a romantic sort of way. It's talking about disconnection in a communal sense. And sometimes this disconnection that we experience is self-imposed. The writer of Ecclesiastes is saying that life disconnected from community and relationships is hollow and full of vanity, no matter how successful you are. Living in community and relationships is a very difficult thing, though. It is a very difficult thing, especially in this sort of consumeristic and individualistic culture that we live in. You know, we were not created to use others to make the most of our lives, but to live and work alongside each other for the good of those who are around us and with us. But we are all so prone to living in such a way in which we use people in our own utilitarian sort of way. Real community and real friendship are very hard things. There's no way around that. They're hard things because this way of living in a way that we kind of just use friendships and use relationships and use community, it puts us at the center of our own universe. But real friendship and real community doesn't put us at the center of our own universe, but it actually limits our own freedom. And it requires of us time and energy. Community is difficult because it costs something of us. You know, for some of us, that might look like giving up some of your time on the weekend to, like, go hang out with a friend who really needs to be, like, seen and heard. For some of you, it might be giving up some of your free time to go to a community group or a shepherding group or to prayer group. You know, for some of you, it may look like giving up some of your emotional health or emotional energy to just ask your spouse or your kids when they come home how their day was and actually listen to them, you know, rather than just going through the motions of that. We typically only want to be in a friendship or a relationship. You know, man's natural tendency is to be in a friendship or a relationship that's convenient. Or we want this sort of community. We want these sort of relationships only when it's necessary or when it's convenient. You know, but by living in this way, in this self-serving sort of way, we can often find ourselves isolated. And we can find ourselves isolated from any kind of meaningful relationship. The writer of Ecclesiastes is telling us that one way we find ourselves disconnected from people is by our own individualistic pursuits. That is one way, he says, we find ourselves isolated. But there's another way we find ourselves isolated. And that's just kind of this random sort of isolation that just happens to us. there's a sort of disconnection that just kind of happens. This is a really elementary analogy, but I'm assuming most of you have probably seen The Lion King. So I'm assuming that most of you have seen it. You know, there's this one scene in it. I had to rewatch it the other day. But if you've seen this movie, you know this scene in the valley with Simba and Mufasa. There's this scene in which Simba is in this valley running away from these gazelles, from all these gazelles, and Mufasa sees him. And Mufasa goes down and saves him. But in the process, Mufasa ends up being murdered by his uncle, Scar. And when Simba goes down into the valley to see his dying father, there's this sense of isolation in which he experiences. He finds himself isolated from the very one who loves him most. And also Scar banishes him from his own home. There's a sense of isolation in which he's experiencing this both on a level and with a personal relationship, but also from a wider community. One of the sad realities of this life is that sometimes we find ourselves isolated for no good reason. Whether that's the result of death, whether that's the result of a friend betraying us, whether that's the result of just moving to a different city because of a job, whether that's the result of like your parents' divorce. There are many times in our life in which we find ourselves isolated, and that is a tragic thing. Perhaps you know that experience. Perhaps you have this sense of wanting to be connected, to be known by someone else, whether that be a friend or maybe even just a spouse. But, this is a sense of like wanting to be known but seeing no way to do it. Perhaps you've known a friendship or known a community and lost it. It's a painful feeling, isn't it? Maybe you felt the weight of living in a house and in a family where there is very little warmth and very little connection within it. Sometimes we can be totally surrounded by others and still feel totally isolated. That might be the case for some of us here, and that's a tragedy. The writer of Ecclesiastes, though, is trying to tell us that the person who is aware that he is isolated is far better off than the person who continues to just stay busy to avoid having to deal with the reality of it. Hear him when he says, "Yet there is no end to his toil, and his eyes are never satisfied with riches, so that he never asks, 'For whom am I toiling and depriving myself of pleasure?'" Those who are lonely and realize it are far better off than those who are isolated and unaware of it. Isolation is a state of disconnection, but it's different than loneliness. We were never intended to live lives of isolation. But we see in the Garden of Eden from Genesis, when God had created Adam but had not yet created Eve, that Adam was alone. And this is before sin or brokenness entered into the world. This is important to see because this means that loneliness actually has a purpose for us as humans. It tells us that feeling alone is not a sinful or weak experience, but in fact has a purpose. So what is it? What is loneliness? And why do we all experience it? So second point, the good of feeling lonely, the dignity in our loneliness. So let's go back to Lion King, because I know you guys are all eager to hear what happened to Simba. So what happens? He goes into the desert. He gets banished from his home. His father is dead, and he's in the desert. And, sure enough, what happens is he immediately finds community. He reconnects himself through his friends, Timon and Pumbaa. We are wired to reconnect. Even when we lose connection in something as painful as death or rejection or betrayal, we are wired for connection. We are not intended to persist in isolation. We are not intended to continue in isolation. In loneliness, as painful as it may be sometimes for us, it can be a strange gift to reconnect us to others, regardless of how we found ourselves disconnected in the first place. Loneliness is a holy, God-given ache for intimacy and connection. this feeling of loneliness is not a bad thing. This feeling of loneliness is not a bad thing. But loneliness indicates to us that we are lacking connection. We were created for relationships. We were created to be known. We were created to be loved. We were created to be in proximity with others, to live life alongside others. In Genesis, we learn that we were created in the image of the triune God. We were not created by a God who exists alone, but by a God who exists alongside other members of the Trinity. What does this mean for us? What does this mean for us? It means we were never meant to be perpetually alone. We were created to be in a relationship with both humans on a horizontal level and vertically with God himself. We were intended for connection. I wonder if you realize this. Like, without loneliness, we wouldn't know that kind of drive to reconnect with people around us. If we didn't experience loneliness, we would be okay with living the rest of our lives in complete isolation from one another. Loneliness is simply the desire for connection. You know, perhaps some of y'all started attending this church simply for the fact that you were lonely. You know, that's how I got connected with the church. That's how I got connected with my RUF back in Orlando, and that's how I began to learn who Jesus was. I think in our culture, we tend to see loneliness as kind of this weak thing. You know, we value independence. We value strength. We value not needing anyone. But is that really strength? There's an immense dignity in loneliness because it means we are created to be in relationship with one another, because we were created in the image of a relational God. It actually takes strength to admit you need people. Loneliness is not a bad thing. Rather, it's something that we can cultivate. And the writer, again, the writer of Ecclesiastes isn't warning us against this experience of feeling lonely, but warning us against just busying ourselves and distracting ourselves from realizing that we were intended for connection. All of us want to avoid our loneliness. For one reason or another, none of us want to sit in the ache of feeling lonely. Loneliness may very well be one of the most painful experiences in human existence, but it very well may be one of the most important experiences. So here's some of these ways that we tend to avoid loneliness. Sometimes we numb it. Sometimes we ignore it. Sometimes we do this by just staying busy all the time. You know, always turning the news on, always turning your smartphone on, always checking Facebook, always checking social media, always checking the news. Sometimes we do this through our lustful fantasies. You know, pornography is an artificial form of intimacy. It is fake. It is disgusting. G.K. Chesterton once said that lust is like drinking salt water, like a man dying of thirst drinking salt water. It's not going to give you what you need. We were intended for real intimacy and real connection. Another way we do this is by constantly surrounding ourselves with people nonstop all the time, so that you just kind of tend to not have to really ever interact with your own loneliness. You know, these are all ways we tend to settle short of the connection that we genuinely need. There's another way we do this, and it's a subtle form of idolatry, in putting all of our loneliness onto one person to hope that this person can just fix it and take it away from us. You know, we can do this with friends. We can do this with our spouse. You know, but when we do this, we place all of these expectations on someone and inadvertently can crush them. Sometimes we avoid loneliness by avoiding community altogether. I know that sounds counterintuitive or kind of obvious, but sometimes when you enter into a room of people that look like they're connected and you're the one feeling lonely and isolated, it almost perpetuates this feeling of loneliness and disconnection. And sometimes we just rather not put ourselves in that position. Sometimes we avoid community because we don't want to feel lonely. So what's the answer? What do we do with this? what do we do with it if not just avoid it and numb ourselves from it and distract ourselves from it? What do we do with this sense of isolation and this sense of loneliness that we all experience? What is the end of isolation and loneliness? So as I said earlier, there's a vertical and a horizontal component to loneliness. In this broken world of ours, left to our own devices, we experience not only some sense of disconnection from one another, but we also experience disconnection from God himself. Where Adam and Eve once walked in intimacy with one another in the garden, they also walked in connection with God himself. They knew perfect intimacy with God and perfect intimacy with man. We need both of these forms of intimacy. It's unwise to think that just human love will fulfill all of your deepest longings. But it's also unwise to think that you can live the Christian life between just you and God. We need the church. We need community. God has wired us for connection with each other. God has wired us for connection with each other and with him. We need to recognize our loneliness. And so we need to recognize it so that we can actually see the solution to it. You know, we need to see that in our default state, we're not connected with God and we're not naturally inclined to giving up our own materialistic pursuits for the sake of our friends and community and the church. In our present estate, we are inclined towards sinful isolation. But God knew that. And he wasn't content to just leave us in that state. The reality is that none of us deserve the kind of intimacy and connection that we want. But God is in the business of giving to the undeserving. This is what is so remarkable about the Christian faith. You know, we don't have a God who asks and waits for us to find a way to connect with him. You know, rather, we have a God who came to us in the flesh. Jesus left his Father's side to come to us. He entered into the loneliness of our condition. The very thing that we try to avoid so often, this sense of loneliness, is something that Jesus entered into so that he could know us intimately, so that we could know him. My favorite singer and songwriter, Sufjan Stevens, once wrote this song called To Be Alone With You. And it's brilliant because it can be speaking both on a human level to another person, but also to God or about God. And so this is what he has to say, I would say, about Jesus. He says, "You gave your body to the lonely. They took your clothes. You gave up a wife and a family. You gave your ghost. To be alone with me, you went up on a tree. To be alone with me, you went up on a tree." Jesus experienced our loneliness to be with us intimately, to know our experience firsthand. Jesus knows the pains that you feel, the losses you've felt, the desires you have to be close to another person. He knows it all. I mentioned how we were intended for connection with both God and with each other, and it's Jesus who reconciles us. But for Jesus to bring us into connection again, he himself had to be cut off. On the cross, Jesus experienced not only the isolation of all of his friends deserting him when he needed them most, but he also experienced the forsakenness by his own Father. And he did this for you. You know, Jesus has earned us a place in the home of God. He's earned us a seat at the table. You know, when Jesus ascended into heaven after his resurrection, you know, he didn't leave us alone to fend for ourselves either. He gave us his Spirit, and he told his disciples, "I am with you always to the end of the age." By his Spirit, Jesus has enabled us to live with each other out of love. Instead of running from our loneliness, we can begin to cultivate it in such a way that it leads us into deeper connection with both one another and with God. Rather than just busying our lives away, we can utilize our loneliness to drive us into self-sacrificial love for our friends, family, and the church. Rather than always turning on the news or going to Facebook or pouring another drink or whatever your standard coping mechanism is, when you begin to feel lonely, by the Spirit's help, instead we can pray. You can pray to the God who knows loneliness firsthand. You can pray to the God who seeks to meet you in your loneliness. Because of Jesus and the work of his Spirit, we can be like those that have someone with them when they fall, like the writer of Ecclesiastes says. We can be like those who have someone with them when they are cold, when they're pressed to the point of feeling like they will break. Jesus is with you. Together we can push forward like Frodo and Sam in The Lord of the Rings, climbing Mount Doom, because we know that this story will not end in isolation. There's hope for us who are in Jesus. We have an end that ends in intimacy, in connection. Elizabeth Elliot once wrote, "It is possible to accept and endure loneliness without bitterness when there is a vision of glory beyond." This is true. Jesus has given us the hope of a future without loneliness or isolation or disconnection, because our greatest desires will ultimately be met by being with God and with each other in perfect fellowship in the new heavens and the new earth. No longer will we feel this sense of disconnection. No longer will we feel the sting of loss or of rejection or of death. No longer will we feel alone or unknown. Instead, we will only know intimacy and connection and joy forever and ever with our Maker. This is good news. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you that you sent Jesus for us, that you know us. You know what loneliness feels like. Jesus, thank you. Thank you for your Spirit, that it dwells deeply in us. Be with us tonight as we go home. Help us not to be afraid of our own loneliness, but to meet you in it. Would you use it to draw us closer to one another? Would you help us as a community? Would you help us to lay down our lives for our friends and for those around us? Because you did that for us. Jesus, we thank you for who you are, your kindness and your goodness and your provision. Thank you that you did not leave us alone. We thank you for this. We pray this all in your glorious name. Amen.